right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool.
Sean, today we've got a random flight of persuasion.
So yeah, we haven't done one of these in a while. So
this these are fun.
Yeah.
Gives us a chance to kind of go in whatever direction we want to. We don't, no guests, no nothing.
Yeah.
We just pick up some random things that are related to persuasion, marketing, and we'll just throw those in there.
Those pesky, that's pesky guests, I tell you.
They keep us on one track, you know.
I know, right?
You know,
it's all about
like
them.
We're typecast into their topic. Yeah, we can't deviate. And that sucks. We like to deviate.
Exactly. Although we do a pretty good job of deviating with guests too. So I guess
they're probably like, what the hell are they doing? Are they taking what? I thought I was coming on here to talk about body language and we're getting into relationships.
I'm helping them solve their problem with their wife and kids.
That's
what's
right.
going on?
So, well, we've got a good one today because we're going to be talking about some topics on, for one, the greatest cartoonist or the greatest marketing cartoonist in history. We're going to be talking, you've got some stuff. We're going to just talk about random stuff that is really interesting that's in the news.
And two of these, at least, your two, are both $1 billion lessons.
Yes, big time.
Big time lessons.
Yeah.
So that's a commonality there. Mine is not anything to do with money, really. I guess it could be, but it's kind of a interesting topic and new book, and we'll talk about that too. But we're also we're going to switch it up on the old beverages on this episode too.
We are. Absolutely. You know, I had this, I just shot you over a text today because I was like, I think it's a whiskey day for our second episode. Yeah. I think it's like, there's a reasoning behind it because we're actually doing a little celebrating this week. We have a baseball team that we have rooted for and they actually won something major this week. It's been quite a few years.
been a few years. Not as long as Georgia's drought, but
I'm convinced this is the year that we win a World Series, and a national championship. So we'll see.
You're not going to throw the Falcons in there?
No. I've given up hope.
Nope.
They had their one shot about 4 years ago, and they blew it in catastrophic fashion. I mean, 28-3 and you blow that lead, you should never have another chance again. So,
yeah. And you don't have hockey anymore, right? I mean, hockey left Atlanta a long time
Thrashers
ago.
Thrashers are long gone. So,
yeah. Well, it was the Flames originally, wasn't it? Atlanta? No, I guess.
Yeah. Well, they was it? Okay. Maybe it was the Flames.
And then I think there was Thrashers or
the
something.
The Thrashers,
And the Hawks. I mean, you and
the Hawks,
follow
yeah.
basketball. So,
yeah.
So, we'll get two out of, 10 sports teams. I think there's a soccer team down there now too.
Yeah.
Who knows? But
But we were watching it Tuesday night in Houston. You know, my gut feeling as a long suffering Braves fan is that we have been here before. I remember the last World Series they won back in 95, barely. And we both have, bring this up because you shared something this week, a little commemorative edition. We both have the last commemorative edition of the Sports Illustrated when the Braves.
I have like the weekly edition, and you have the commemorative edition of Sports Illustrated, and it's getting kind of worn at this point.
It's
been through about 30 moves with me.
That's right,
and somehow I've kept it. But so I got to find. That, and then I got to find the I've got a Georgia Coke bottle around here somewhere from 1980.
Oh yes, those Coke bottles. Oh yes.
See if those. I don't know if those, they still do those or not. I assume they do.
I don't think maybe so.
We just haven't needed to find out in a while.
I mean, I've got one of those too, and I'm convinced if Georgia wins it, I may just pop the cap on that and drink that son of a gun.
Drink that flat Coke.
I might have to pour some whiskey in to kill whatever's in it, right?
Speaking of whiskeys, Let's
there you go. Good transition. Smooth transition. Yes. I love it.
What do you have on your end? Since this is your idea.
Yeah. So I have a straight out of your state there, Sean.
Cool. So we're doing two Texas.
Yes.
Two Texas whiskeys.
Texas. This is a Balcones Lineage Texas whiskey. The Balcones Distillery, and I may not even be pronouncing that right. Balcones Distillery, Lineage Texas single malt whiskey. So the reason I picked this up, I was going to pick up a bourbon today, and I came across this. This is the Whiskey Advocate Top 20 Award winner. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try this. So just to give you a little background, it's a nod to new and old. It says Lineage is marrying of the traditional Scott single malt that have long been an inspiration to us with innovative approaches to grain and maturation to celebrate Texas provenance. Made from both Scottish and Texas grown barley and aged in both refill and new oak barrels, Lineage celebrates both old and new traditions. So
which one do you have?
The lineage. Hmm. Yeah.
There it is right there.
Yep. The classics. Look at that. I love the classics. Look at that pour. Who does a pour?
Look at that. They're even doing a flight of three, just like we are today.
I know. That is awesome.
Man, that's good stuff. It's got a very deep red.
It does.
Color. That's nice.
Should be interesting to see. Nice. Was it nose? Nose?
Yeah, whatever.
Sweet. Okay. I'm even reading the notes, so I don't even have to like fake this. Sweet and indulgent. Okay. Sour dour starter and cream
sourdough.
Soda.
Sourdough starter.
Sour dour.
Put your glasses on.
I think I've had too many already. Sourdough starter and cream soda, mulled cider, bruised bananas, which I hate, and peaches. Tea tree. Yeah.
Wow. Seems like there should be an and there.
Yeah. And tea tree. No, not and.
Caramelized sweetness, soft oak, Manuka honey. Now that is weird. I was just talking to somebody earlier today about Manuka honey.
Yeah.
How weird is that? Chestnuts and a hint of red wine reduction. Yes. Like literally there's a friend of mine is doing some marketing for a company that sells Manuka honey. Mm-hmm. It's like $40 a jar.
Crazy. Oh, wow. Stuff.
Yeah. It's like high end honey.
High end. What? Yeah, no doubt. $40 a jar.
Yeah. There's a whole marketing lesson right there. Right. Absolutely. All right. So since you're doing Texas whiskey, I'm also doing Texas whiskey. I am doing, from Andalusia Whiskey Company. I am having the Striker whiskey, and it's kind of in that same category with you. It's mm-hmm. a little bit the darker reddish colors. Yeah. We're on the same page today. Mm-hmm. And actually I was at this is a certified Texas whiskey. So it's like it's super smoky. I know that because obviously I've had a few out of this.
You think? Hold up that bottle again.
Yeah. Well, it's a small bottle. Yeah, it's about half gone.
Yeah.
It says Striker adopts the Scottish tradition of smoking malted barley that is destined to be used in their signature Islay scotches. Rather than burning peat, however, Striker is mashed for malted barley that has been smoked in the Texas barbecue tradition with oak, mesquite, mm-hmm. and apple woods. This is backyard barbecue whiskey at its best. So one of the things, and it'll be interesting to see if that one's that way.
Yeah.
Texas whiskeys tend to be very smoky.
So you're right. You're right on that. The one bourbon, Texas bourbon that I've had before, and I think we had it on the show, that was super smoky.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
My little tin cup.
Hmm. Oh, that is so smooth.
Whew, mine is not smooth, but it's good. It is.
Is it mine is on
like
fire?
That's what you expect when you're like at a bar and you take a shot and like it's like, oh yeah, we're having whiskey now. So yours is super smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? It's got a little.
No, it's not very smoky. It's got a little bite at the end.
Yeah, mine. You can smell the smoke. Like you can taste the smoke.
No, this one not at all. But you know, this is a. I guess it's a Scotch. Is it a Scotch whiskey?
You said single malt, right? So yeah, yep. Single malt whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good.
Late palate.
I can taste the. There's a little bit of like a caramelized taste.
Yep.
You get the, you get kind of the oaky, a little bit of the oaky, the caramelized taste.
Here I don't track. Caramelized sweetness, soft oak, manuka honey. You taste the honey, that fancy honey.
I don't taste any honey, but I'm sure it's in there.
Chestnuts and a hint of red wine reduction.
Red wine reduction. What does that mean?
What is red wine? Yes, it's got a little. Is it the red color? I don't know. Have to keep drinking until you taste it. That's the way it goes.
It's good. I love it. It's by the way, it's 47%. 47% alcohol by volume. So
mine is 58.31%. It's a little stronger.
No doubt, man. Maybe that's solid.
Maybe that's what I'm feeling.
That's over 100 proof right there.
Yeah. That'd be what, 117, 116?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's really good. I'll have to send you one.
All right. One more toast to the Braves and we'll get right in. And if I had a tomahawk chop,
I know, right?
I would do it. All right. Good stuff.
Yeah, that was a much better win than 1-0 in 95.
Yeah. It was 7-0.
John Smoltz was talking about that. He's like, because he was the pitcher for game 7.
Yep.
In 95, if they had lost game mm-hmm. 6.
Yep.
And he said, he said on this one, he was like, yeah, my stomach was in knots for hours because I did not want to pitch game 7.
Oh man. You know, what's crazy is Sunday night I'm watching the game and you know, it was in Atlanta Sunday night. So they showed they panned to some of the old, you know, Smoltzy, some of the, the professor, Greg Maddux. Greg Maddux was the old professor. Man, that guy has aged big time.
I wonder if we have.
I know. It's like, I texted my brother and I was like, man, the professor looks like the old professor now.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that's the way we all go pretty much. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, it was just,
it's funny how your childhood or I wouldn't say childhood, but the people that you've, you know, put on this pedestal long ago, you know, kind of athletic heroes. You know, you look at the old, you know, the greats in baseball, even in football. You look at Joe Montana today, you see commercials with him and it's like, wow. Yeah. And that was the one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. And he's
When they start advertising for AARP and diabetes and reverse mortgages, you're like, oh man.
They've come a long way. Old Joe Namath. It's bad.
Not sporting the mink coat anymore, are you, Joe?
No, no he's not. Although there's some good, you know, there's some good takeaways from that, but we won't get into that today.
Instead of guaranteeing Super Bowls, he's guaranteeing a reverse mortgage.
Reverse mortgages. No doubt. Oh man, how the mighty fall, you know, as we all go at some point, I guess. But But yeah, so we've got some fun stuff to talk about today. I sent you some stuff today on what I found was a fascinating story that I watched earlier this week.
I had no idea. Like when you sent me that stuff, I was like, are you kidding me? Seriously? And then as I watched the videos you sent, I was like, Yeah, it was everywhere for a while.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Yes, every card did have one of these characters in it for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
so much so that they literally stopped producing because they thought it was going to be too much.
Yeah, exactly.
That's crazy.
So I've always envisioned, because we've talked about Scott Adams a number of times on the show. He's written books on persuasion. He's got his own podcast. So, he's kind of more in the, he's still kind of relevant in the news today. And you hear about him because he's doing something other than Dilbert, which Dilbert is one of the all time, one of the most popular comics. And he's, it's kind of a similar example of what we're going to talk about today of how he's used that in so many facets. You see Dilbert books, Dilbert calendars that you can buy around the holidays and all the stuff. He's leveraged that into, a product empire in terms of, all sorts of things. But I didn't realize that this person who we're going to be discussing has surpassed him by even more. And we're talking about Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield.
Garfield.
Yeah. So
that is now that we don't.
Do you read Garfield much? I remember that I used to read it when I was a kid all the time, the comics.
But yeah, I don't even know where you read comics anymore. Like, where are they?
Yeah. Yep.
We'll get into some of the other products he has now, but back in the day, Garfield was everywhere. I don't know when that was. I don't remember if it was like 80s in high school or if it was 90s. I'm thinking it must have been like late 80s, early 90s.
I think you're right. I think it's late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Because I remember, greeting cards. Garfield was on greeting cards.
He cartoons was on
everything.
On Saturday morning, holiday specials. He was everywhere. Yeah,
they did movies, everything. Movies.
Yeah.
So that was, that hit the height of popularity. And we're talking from a marketing standpoint, over $50 million, just in that name alone, probably more than that. But, Jim Davis created just a complete marketing empire from that. But it was interesting, from a persuasion standpoint, why he chose the character that he did. And maybe we'll post a link to the videos, but he started out, Garfield wasn't the first character that he tried to do a cartoon series on. It was he did one that was on an insect back in the 70s, and it was a gnat.
He's trying to do a Bug's Life before it was cool.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
It
did not work. And so finally, he was hitting on this for years at a local newspaper. I guess he was publishing this cartoon, really not getting anywhere, not a whole lot of traction with it. And somebody gave him somebody just basically told him up front is like, no one, bugs are not just, no one relates to a bug.
Relatability.
Yeah. It's all about relatability. And so he finally squashed that cartoon. And literally squashed it. The way he ended that cartoon series is the main character in the cartoon. He had somebody literally step on the character and squash him. And that's how he ended
it. That's awesome. I love that.
So he ended that series abruptly with a squash.
There's a lesson even right there, not to take yourself so seriously.
That's right. That's right.
Now, he could have ended that a lot of ways, but it's dead. Let's just... How do most bugs die? I guess I don't know, or some bugs die.
That's right. They get stepped on. So, so he thought that was the best way to just kind of cut it. End it immediately. The main character gets stepped on, and that's it. So, so he tried to decide, which direction to go, and people like dogs, but he kind of reasoned that a cat, is relatable. A lot of people own cats, but cats have personalities a little bit different than dogs. We think of dogs, they're loyal.
Yes.
They, we love them. They're loyal to us. They come up, they're with us no matter what. Cats have their own personality where they, are kind of off to themselves a lot of times, and they're, you know, and we can relate. Some people can relate to those, you know, that personality of having their own kind of personality on the side, not being really totally mushy.
You don't have to be nice about it. Cats are jerks.
Cats are jerks. Okay. Yeah, there you go. But I think we can put our own personality on cats probably more than dogs sometimes. Cause we think, yeah, I'm like that. I'm like that.
I mean, I would say we're probably more like cats than dogs, because dogs are just, they love you. They're forgiving. They're always to see you. I mean, we're definitely more like cats. So, which goes back to the relatability, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And that's what, you know, somebody gave him advice. It says, you got to pick a character. And this is a great lesson in anything that you're doing, is anything has to be relatable to your audience. And I think that that's a lot of the success that Scott Adams had with Dilbert, you know, in his cartoon, was that a lot of his characters are relatable. People can relate to everyday, the stupidity of office politics, of upper management that is really has their head up their rear end so much of the time.
Yeah, I think if somebody created a Dilbert version that was a work from home, that could work today.
Absolutely. Right? I think it would.
In the cubicle era, and it's just classic, because obviously there's still plenty of people. But now that there's been this huge shift to work at home, somebody needs to come up with a from home cartoon Dilbert-ish character, right?
Yep.
I mean, we'd be laying around, sitting around in sweatpants all day, be a cross between Dilbert and Garfield, I guess, probably.
Yep.
I think what was interesting in what you sent me is, he looked around and he looked at some of the most popular cartoons. And obviously one of the most popular cartoons of all time is the Peanuts. Mm-hmm. But he noticed what was most successful about that, or what was most marketable about that was Snoopy. Like there was licensing for Snoopy, but not for Charlie Brown.
Right.
Even though Charlie Brown's the main character. Mm-hmm. Snoopy is the one that gets licensing deals.
Yep.
Maybe
every time
Woodstock, you know, but it's not, none of the characters get that much street cred as far as marketing and licensing and all that stuff.
Right.
Snoopy had his own cartoon with the Red Bear, and it's like, he's the star. He's the real star of the show.
Sure.
So he was like, well, that's a dog, so let me do a cat.
Yeah.
It can be that simple sometimes when we're looking for ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a great point, is that, you know, Charlie Brown, star of the show, but yet.
And he could have tried to build out like an entire, gang of people with Garfield, you have Odie and you have whoever the master is. I can't remember his name. Yeah.
John.
Yeah. So there's really only three characters for the most part, instead of 10, like you have with the Peanuts or whatever.
Sure. It is. Right.
So that's, you know, that's a smart move. You draw less, make the same amount of money. But he particularly picked something like this because he wanted to do more than just cartoons from day one.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a huge lesson.
He was thinking long term. From a relatability standpoint, the marketing cash from having a cat, right? You know, obviously people love cats, love their pets. And so that was a big, big factor in that. And it's kind of interesting if you watch, and we'll post a link to, the video on the show page, but the evolution of Garfield, you know, how he started out, I guess when he started out in the 70s and, you know, completely looks different than he does today. But the storylines, you know, one of the things that I took away from it is like a lot of his cartoons aren't necessarily super funny. You know, you don't ever read a Garfield comic and come away just laughing. I think it's just like there's a cynicism about the cat. But I think it's more of a cynicism or relatability that he's saying what a lot of people are thinking sometimes in everyday life. So,
yeah. And because he's a cat. Yeah. He can get away with whatever
he gets away with it.
I've got a client that I'm working with now.
Right.
And they have a dog who sometimes shows up. And actually the company's half named after the dog.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you not using the dog board? Like, you can say anything you want with the dog.
Right.
The dog can get away with anything.
Anything.
You know, political, whatever. Yeah. Now, Garfield, he intentionally stayed away from politics.
He did.
The fact is, when you have a character like that, especially something that's loved by a lot of people, they can get away with so much more than a human character could.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a key, because there's been a lot of famous cartoons out there. You think of like Doonesbury, which we mentioned. I got, you know, Trudeau. I think that was Gary Trudeau. That guy was famous, but you know, he got typecast. You know, obviously a lot of his cartoons were more politically oriented. Mm-hmm. So he was only going to hit a certain segment of the market. Whereas, you know, cartoonists like Jim Davis, even Scott Adams, you know, they were looking at it's hard to market that in a broad spectrum. Right. Yeah. Something that everyone can relate to, you know, it kind of goes against, and it's actually kind of falls into what, you know, one of your topics for today's show is like, you know, the book that you're going to talk about. So
that's a nice segue. Should we just go there?
We should just go there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really expect to go there, but as I was talking, I was like, wait a minute now, this is kind of working with your book. So
I tell you, that's good. So yeah. So I picked up this book, Range by David Epstein. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a popular book right now.
Yep.
But the basic, the subtitle is Why Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World, which I love, because I consider myself a generalist and I've been fighting this specialist thing for a long time.
Sure.
And this, especially in the world, you know, Jonathan, that we're in with marketing, and you got to have a niche of a sub niche of a sub niche of a niche within a niche. Like, it's getting crazy, like how niched you're supposed to be to do marketing and all this other stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And this idea, and the go-to argument is always, well, would you rather have a general practitioner or a heart surgeon if you had a heart attack? Well, obviously you'd rather have a heart surgeon, but that's a pretty narrow example, a lot of those types of examples are. But what the book basically says, it kind of debunks the 10,000, not so much the 10,000 hours. He does talk about that.
Right.
But the thing that he starts with in the book is Tiger Woods versus Roger Federer. Mm. They're both are elite athletes. Yeah,
right.
Tiger Woods, though, starts at 6 months old, starts carrying a putter around the house. By three, he's winning 10 and under tournaments, like all the way through, you know, his life.
Yeah.
So he's like the poster boy for like early specialization and lots of effort in that one discipline to become great.
Yeah.
Roger Federer, on the other hand, even though his mom was a tennis coach, they never pushed him into tennis. He played pretty much every sport there was and didn't get serious about tennis until well into his teens.
Yeah.
And then became really good at it.
That's awesome.
And what they found when this guy started like really pulling apart the research, that's actually more common. The Federer model is actually much more common for elites. For elite level athletes, musicians, business people, that they have a diverse background than it is that they have a very specific track.
Yep, absolutely.
another example he gave was that CEOs who were a part of startups at age 50 are far more successful than CEOs that are 30 that have been in the same field all that time and doing a startup.
Yeah.
And as 50 year olds, you know, you and I really like that stat.
We do. Well, it makes me think of a lot. I mean, we could go after example, you know, example after example of, you know, entrepreneurs who have done so many different things.
Yeah.
And, you know, late in their careers have launched successful businesses, and it had a lot to do with their experience. Right.
Right. And it's the variety of experience that allows them to see connections that other, that specialists can't see. And that's the big thing is as the world gets more and more specialized and people get entrenched in their lane. Yeah. You see this a lot with engineers.
Yep. Oh, all the time.
Where they get, they're super knowledgeable about one very narrow thing, but then they can't relate to anything outside of that.
Right.
They're super good. They're needed, you know, but as the world gets more specialized, there's a need. And this guy's argument is that actually generalists are going to be more needed as we move forward.
Yeah.
In order to be able to see things and the connections and to see pitfalls that the specialists are not going to be able to see.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, you know, the way that relates back to Garfield was that it's much more general. Like the stuff he talks about is very general. Mm-hmm. And I'm reminded of a quote too, that, you know, that which is most personal is most general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyday life.
Right. Yeah. Everyday life seems very specific, but at the same time, it's very universal and very relatable.
Yep.
Like everybody knows how it feels to eat too much lasagna.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's common. It's common themes that relate to everyday life. You know, Jim Davis never got into politics. He never got into anything that was controversial, which, you know, we're told sometimes in, you know, today to get controversy, you know, you want to get publicity, two ways to go. Right. So you can build an audience that way, but you can also build a successful audience that people can relate to. And I think that that's, I really think that it really is dependent. You have to sit down and kind of look at what your goals are, what your industry is. Because one thing that pigeonholes you or, you know, niches you into a certain segment, can be detrimental in one industry, but it could be, you know, really good in another. You know, we talk about, you know, media. If you're going into media, you know, if you want to be a media celebrity or have a podcast or do something like that, you probably should be a little bit controversial. So, you know, that gets listeners, that attracts people. But, you know, I think, you know, it really depends. You have to examine. Generalists can do really well in certain other areas, like, you know, cartoons. I think when people look at cartoonists or people read, you know, comic strips, I don't think they go there to read, you know, things that are, you know, segmented to one controversy or one political segment or some certain demographic. They want to, like, you know, read something that's very relatable to everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. They want to know they're not alone.
Yep.
You know, and that they're not crazy for thinking these thoughts.
Right. Right.
And that kind of stuff. Yep. You know, if you look back over the last 100 years at the most popular books, movies, things like that, a lot of them tend to be very general type things. Especially a lot of the top nonfiction books, they cover very wide topics. So I've always had this, you know, as a marketer, you know, niching and doing marketing campaigns versus, you know, I see that side of it, but at the same time, some of the biggest companies in the world, some of the most successful best-selling books in the world they serve a lot of people. I mean, the biggest companies in the world, Amazon, you know, it has everything, literally, like everything, you know, but they didn't, to be fair, and for those listening that are yelling back at the podcast, like, yes, they started with just books.
Yeah.
Right. But it was books about everything.
Sure.
But they did start with just books, so they could really market that. And then they grew from there. So I don't, you know, it's this, I think today we're really torn. Like, it's this or that, you know, we see that in politics. We see it all over the place. And the fact is, and Bill Maher's been talking a lot about this on his show, is he's been ranting. He's like, you can hold two different ideas in your brain at the same time and then both be right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, or not both be wrong. Like, you know, you can have this and this, and even if they oppose, they can both still be true.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of marketers tend to forget, because we get so focused in on, we have this niche and specialize and everything else. And the fact is, there's room for both.
It is.
And there's a need for both.
Well, I remember years ago, and I've told this story time and time again, but it's like, you know, you can wear yourself out niching, because if you drill too deep, you can really segment yourself so much that, you know, your audience is super specific, but then you're kind of worried that, like, okay, there's only so many people in this audience. And so you're looking at, wait, okay, I need to niche this message into this industry, right? Uh-huh. You know, so, because you're always concerned, like, I need to have a backup industry too. So I want to have this, I want to niche in this industry, in this industry, in this industry. And I used to do that from a marketing perspective, you know, and so I would go into this niche, you know, obviously I've told you in the past, you know, niching into the veterinarian niche, a niche that I didn't know a whole lot about, which was dumb. That was like a dumb play on mine, but I bought into the whole, you know, going super specific. And I looked at it, you know, I looked at that niche and that demographic from, you know, purely from a, you know, opportunity standpoint, nothing else, right? I didn't know anything about it. And I made quite a bit of money from it, but at the end of the day, it was like, I had no interest in it whatsoever. And I felt, you know, it's almost feeling like too, in some aspects, you feel like you're not believable, and you're kind of, I wouldn't say a fraud, but you're not as believable when you niche yourself into a segment that you're not as familiar with. Right.
Yeah. And I'd even argue that just as humans, we're pretty varied creatures. I mean, I mean, you just look at the shows or the movies you watch, you know. Yeah, you might lean more towards a certain category, drama, action, you know, mystery, whatever. But you probably like a lot of different things, a lot of different types of shows. You might watch a sitcom in one, you know, one setting, and then a drama in another. And and then you go out and run a Spartan race, and then you do like, I mean, that's being human. Right. And I think that's what's, you don't want to be, I've got a working theory right now that with algorithms and with how, what we're seeing with what really works with ads, which is lot with longer copy, that the Facebook and YouTube and things like that are looking at the copy to find the people to niche. I believe that we've almost come to this place where the marketer themselves is the niche.
Yeah.
So you are the niche.
Right.
Your beliefs, your things that you believe, the way you believe them, the sum of things you believe is attractive to a group of people.
Sure.
Yeah. And if you just stand on what you believe and excites you, what interests you, whatever weird combination that is, because of algorithms and because of reach that we have now that we've never had before.
Sure.
You are the niche.
Yeah.
And all with all your idiosyncrasies and strangeness. And there's going to be a group of people that relate.
Yeah. Because you have a passion for it. I think you have enthusiasm for that niche, and it shows. Instead
of going after the data.
Right. And that was my problem. Yeah. You're going after what you think is a moneymaker, but you have no interest in it. And people can see through that every time.
Yeah.
And so you've got to niche if you're going to niche. And you know what I always heard Brandon Bouchard, cause I went to one of his boot camps, you know, years back, where he says, you know, niching, everybody wants to niche. He's like, but take your message from a broad standpoint and just, you know, it's easy to take your message from a broad standpoint and really, you know, target other industries in the same, you know, in the same, I guess, you know, you don't have to create, you know, platforms in each industry. You just, you know, you create, you know, your broad spectrum, you know, who you are, your personality, and then you can market to those, you know, to those industries, to those niche markets, but you don't have to change or, you know, change your platform every time to fit, you know, those industries. And that's what I did. And you can wear yourself out. You can, you know, tire yourself out completely trying to do that, which I did. You know, I burned myself out trying to do so many niches.
Well, I mean, Brendan's a great example. He started out, you know, he was teaching people how to be experts, and now he teaches personal development habits.
Exactly.
You know, which he, so he basically shifted from marketing to personal development.
Right.
And motivation and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there's even other examples of I'm thinking of one guy right now, his YouTube channel is just all over the place.
Yeah.
But he's got a very specific style that no matter what he's talking about, he's got the same energy, the same interest. Sure.
Right.
You know, he can go from talking about nutrition stuff to talking about Bitcoin to talking about whatever, dating.
Right.
And you follow him because of it's his personality. I mean, this is why we follow, you know, a lot of celebrities and talk show hosts, even though they cover the gamut on stuff. And I think that's more and more it's person. I think the market is going personality driven. Well,
yeah. Joe Rogan is a great example because he covers
about
a gamut.
Everything.
Yeah. Everything under the sun is like Joe Rogan, but you know,
he's a comedian outside of his podcast and all these other things that he does outside, you know, commentator for UFC, a stand-up comedian, a podcaster that, like you said, covers everything you could think of,
right?
From politics to nutrition to, I mean, he just did an interview with Jewel that was like 4 hours long. That amazing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just all over the place. But what people are buying, even though most of his stuff is free, you know, what people are buying about him is the way he asks questions, the way he interacts with his guests. And, you know, he's just kind of got every guy, every man, you know, again, going back to relatable. He's kind of like a Garfield, like he's relatable.
Yeah, very much.
He asks the questions that we would want to ask the guest.
Yep.
You know, he notices things in his comedy that we are like, oh yeah, I've noticed that.
And
he just put it together better.
Yep.
So what's our third topic? Since I don't have
So this actually fits within our topic of range a little bit. Okay. So I, you know, Sean, we were talking earlier. So I'm traveling up into Clarksville, Tennessee, which is right above Nashville yesterday. You know, I'm driving down, I'm looking for a coffee shop, and here off to, all of a sudden I see off to my right, there is a Black Rifle Coffee Company, which I've seen ads on Facebook forever, you know, for a long time. And I'm like, dude, there is a, you know, there's a location. I didn't know they had a location. So I pulled in, go through the drive-thru. I didn't go in, but I went through the drive-thru. I ordered my coffee. And then as I pull up, they're advertising the magazine, which is Coffee or Die, which I love. And so I told the barista at the drive-thru window, I said, so what's the magazine? I was asking her questions about the magazine. What's that about? And she's like, oh yeah. She was telling me about the magazine. It's $12. So I'm like, go ahead and put that on my order. Cause I'm really interested. Cause it was like, it's in one of the, you know, it's in the, sealed, there you go, right there. The Black Rifle. What is that website?
BlackRifleCoffee.com.
BlackRifleCoffee.com.
So for those, let's just lay this out a little bit for those that are not familiar with Black Rifle Coffee.
Veteran-owned.
They should not be in business.
With
today's cancel culture.
They should not. Yeah, exactly. So the story behind this company is it's a veteran owned, you know, it's a veteran owned company. You know, the guy that, or the people that run the company are all veterans. They've got really great stories. And I've learned more about it. I didn't know a whole lot about it until I started actually reading the magazine. So like I said, I poured into the drive-thru, ordered my coffee. I get up to the window and they've got good marketing from their standpoint. They've got they've got the magazine sitting at the drive-thru window, and it's in the, you know, it's in the plastic wrap. So you can't really, you know, access it. And so I'm like, OK, okay, do you have a copy of that? Cause I'm really interested. And she's like, yeah, it's $12. You know, it's got the sign on there. So I was like, just add that to my order. And I'm going through the magazine. The stories are fantastic. I mean, they've got really good writers on that. They have some really good stories. I'm going to give you an example here because I spent some time on this bad boy.
Well, while you're doing that real quick. So like for people that aren't familiar, obviously it's Black Rifle Coffee. In the military, your rifle is black, right? So that's part of it.
That's right.
But most of their coffee has, so some of their coffee names, so just Black Coffee Roast. It's just a basic dark roast, but on the packaging, it has a M16, M15, whatever,
yes.
AR-15.
Yes.
Depending, but yeah. They've got, you know, Freedom Fuel Coffee. They've got Coffee or Die Coffee Rounds. They actually call their little cups for like your Keurig. They call them rounds instead of cups. So it's very like gun oriented.
Yep.
You know, and if you go on their Instagram page, there's more guns than there is coffee. Like it's just guys and girls shooting guns,
which is brilliant from a marketing standpoint. There might be
like a little coffee out in the background.
Sure.
All wearing, you know, flag shirts, Punisher shirts, like all this kind of stuff. So, you know, gunship coffee. Mm-hmm. Like everything is very military, very kind of alpha feeling, you know, which shouldn't work today. Right. I mean, with the cancel culture and with anti-gun culture and all
that's right. Although it's brilliant from one standpoint, you cannot, whatever, you know, you can't cancel the that's like an area that you don't tread on. It's like you don't try to cancel the military.
Well, that's what we think. But there's definitely people that, you know,
they want to
get rid of police. They'll probably military's next. Yeah,
but you saw what happened Tuesday. I mean,
stuff
backfires, man, big time.
Exactly. But it's just one of those. They took a stand in a certain direction. And again, it's based on kind of what we were talking about before. It's what they like. What they're passionate about. They didn't go look for a niche of, I wonder if there's a niche of coffee drinkers that also like guns and like shoot them.
Yeah.
They're like, we like guns. We like coffee. Let's start a coffee brand. And
exactly. I mean,
that's the difference.
Yep. One of the founders is, you know, he's former, you know, he's a Ranger, Green Beret, you know, he just talks about, you know, his experience. Really cool. If you go to the website, you can see the video. Mm-hmm. But I mean, these guys are completely 100% authentic. But what I found was like this magazine, it's a quarterly magazine. But what they're doing throughout the magazine, it's actually really smart on their part. It's good articles, and they're even talking to, you know, they even say, you know, hey, submit an article to us and we'll run it. Right. So it's a win-win. You know, they're talking to people out there, you know, if you have ideas for an article that we can include on our quarterly magazine, hey, shoot it to us and we'll include it. That gives you publicity. It gives, you know, obviously us content, but at the same time, they're having articles throughout their magazine that brand and market their coffee, right? Because obviously it's working hand in hand. So I think it's smart on their part, because we see publications that come out, you know, and the struggle of any publication is that you're always seeking advertising. Well, these guys are actually publishing the magazine, but they're using their own product as one of the main advertisers in the magazine. Smart. Yep.
Yes.
That's a good strategy. And they've got some good, like I said, it's some of the articles in here are fantastic. You know, they've got like, they'll mix in military articles with articles called, I mean, here's one called the caffeinated life, how leadership at BRCC shifted from government service to veteran service. And it's like, there's always like a subtle, within the article, like a subtle reference to, you know, coffee, and they've got ads throughout it. So I think they're doing a really cool job of like really branding themselves throughout their own publication, and using that to, I mean, here's an article called the Taiwan Report, how America narrowly avoided nuclear war in 1958. Like, I didn't even know that. I didn't know we were, I mean, I knew that we, you know, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis, but I didn't know about this thing with, you know, in 1958, you know, which was like a little bit earlier than the Cuban Missile Crisis. So really cool stuff. A lot of good content in there, but the, you know, the key takeaway is that they're using, you know, obviously they're promoting their own brand within content that they put out from a quarterly, and it's really well done. I mean, the magazine's super nice. I mean, it's like, it doesn't feel like the, you know, like skimpy, you know, a skimpy magazine. It's pretty hefty. You know, it makes me feel like one of those, what is it? The Millionaire Blueprints that I used to read years ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, for those that, again, that don't know or keep up with Black Rifle Comp, you may think that, oh, well, that's cute. They got their little following. They've got their people.
Yeah.
So they got 1 million people on Instagram.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And they just went public at a valuation of $1.7 billion.
Oh, wow.
In a in a commoditized market. Right. I mean, coffee, let's face it. I mean, coffee is literally a commodity on the commodity exchange.
Right.
Right. I mean, so they've gone from nothing and, you know, to building this business around their own identity. And it's now evaluated at $1.7 billion.
Wow. You know, $1.7 billion.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yep. And I just looked up, not counting active duty, but there are 19 million U.S. veterans in this country. So that alone is a pretty nice base, and that's who they're targeting. But you know, that's a pretty, going back to our earlier thing, that's a pretty broad niche. It's not a niche within a niche within a niche. You know, that's just veterans, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
So, right. And they obviously reach beyond that too. You know, a lot of people who didn't go in the military, but like guns and things like that.
Oh, sure.
Our customers as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know,
interested to know, like, this location is in Clarksville. Everybody knows there's a, you know, you got Fort Campbell is the army base in, you know, up in that area. But, you know, I wonder some of their other locations, if they're strategically placed near, you know, outposts,
military bases,
or, yeah, military like bases, that. Like the one in Texas is,
yeah. So there's one in Groon, Texas, which is north of, San Antonio. So there's a base in San Antonio. I'm not sure where else they are. I don't actually see like a location thing on their website. I don't think they have a lot of stores. I think that's a kind of a new thing. And that'll be interesting to see if they try to roll that out on a more substantial basis. Because that's, I mean, I don't know, I could see a lot of like backlash from communities with somebody with a Black Rifle coffee company coming into their town.
Yeah.
Depending on the town, you know.
It really depends on the town.
Which would probably make these guys all the more want to do it, you know?
So well, let me tell you, they had a line of people yesterday. I mean, they had customers like,
well, so. I was going to go to the one here and we were in that town and it just happened that they had like some flood damage, from a rainstorm or something happened. Yeah. So they were closed and I wasn't able to go in, but we may go back. Now that it's kind of cooling off and it's kind of cool little town that they're in, take another trip out there and take a look. But yeah, I don't see anywhere on their site that has locations, but
yeah,
I'm sure it's somewhere, but I can't find it. But yeah, cool story, cool brands.
Very much.
Yeah. So I think you want to be relatable. The theme of this show, I think you want to be relatable, but at the same time, you want to be yourself. Just do what you want to do, man.
Right.
I think we're at a time where because of reach and because of algorithms, you can do your own thing.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, if you go to their website, You can listen to some of their stories, and that's, that's first and foremost. I think the people have a passion, you know, they have a story, a background story. Obviously it's authentic. All these guys are prior military. But one of the primary founders, he talks about his story, you know, why he went in the military, why, you know, he went into, you know, he went to Ranger school, and just share some of the experience from that. And, you know, why they're, you know, why they created this brand. So, you know, I think that's more important than, you know, seeking, you know, a niche and trying to make money. Like we were saying earlier, trying to make money off of a niche is really not the way to go. It's identifying who you are and really just, you know, being authentic about that. And then, you know, obviously the following will come, you know, people are attracted to people that have a passion and have a vision for that company, I think today. So,
yep, for sure. People are looking for people that are excited about life. Yep. I mean, we've known for years in sales, right? Zig Ziglar said sales is just a transfer of enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm every time. Yep.
So if you're enthusiastic about your stuff, then other people will follow for sure.
Bingo.
So yeah, check out, so their site, and they've actually got a couple sites. It looks like there's Black Rifle Coffee Company, and then there's coffeeordie.com as well. So that's interesting.
Which is, again, the publication, I think, if you want to sign up for it.
Yeah.
I don't know what the subscription
is. That's probably why. Yeah, I must have clicked through to something. That's why I couldn't find the sites.
Here's an article. I'll read you would appreciate some of these articles, Sean, from a copywriting standpoint. You can shit in your pants twice a year before you lose cool points. That's one article. Baptism by fire. When your first arrest as a rookie cop in the hood is a crackhead prostitute with superhuman strength. Story.
Yeah. That's like National Enquirer stuff right there.
Yeah. So stories sell, but yeah.
How can you not read that? I mean, that's like, yeah.
Intrigue.
And I love that it's print. You know, like,
yeah,
man, I just so want more print publications to come.
I do too. These are, I mean,
this and there's actually a trend. I know my daughter who is 21, like she would rather have a print book than an ebook. And I think that trend, and I mean, it's just like vinyl is outselling, in a lot of cases, vinyl is outselling, everything else.
Yeah, no doubt.
So.
I think there's a move back to the, you know, we talked about earlier, the Braves move back to, you know, tradition.
Yeah.
You know,
well, cause you know, in this world where you don't own anything, where it's becoming a rental world, like it's nice to have stuff that you actually own.
That's right. Exactly.
No doubt. So, all right. Well, yeah. If you want to check out Black Rifle Coffee, there's that. We'll put some links to the Garfield videos in the show notes as well.
Definitely.
And then the book that we talked about is Range by David Epstein.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good read, but I'm going to be honest with the book review here. Like you could read the intro and the conclusion and kind of get the whole, the first chapter and get the whole thing. I think he even has a TED talk that he did on it.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of books today. There's a lot of examples if you want to really get into that, but the premise is pretty simple.
Yeah.
So,
well, the first one that you shared with Tiger Woods and,
I mean, that's what he built the whole book on was that example.
Yeah. That's a great one. Yeah. So
if you read beyond that, it's just extra examples, which are interesting. I mean, he gets into military and some other areas that he did research, but
sure.
Depends on how deep you want to go. Me, I like all that stuff, but some people just want to know the guts of it. So,
absolutely.
All right. Well, good stuff. Good flight. Yeah.
Yep. Good flight today. And as always, you can find us persuasionbythepike.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify. And if you have questions, you can reach out to us over at persuasionbythepike@gmail.com. Love your questions. And as always, take care. Have a great week. Sean, we'll see you next time.
See ya.